welcome to Poker in the Ears, our 300th episode, live from London and the Hippodrome Casino. If you are here for Magic Mike, you are in the wrong place. Get the fuck out. I'm Uncle Daddy Joe Stapleton. He is my work wife, James Hardigan.
Happy anniversary, Joey.
That's right, 300 years. Unbelievable. You know what? We should have got each other presents.
Spoiler alert. I did.
I did too. Aww. We'll cover that in a little bit. Wow, it already took a sad turn. Okay, coming up on today's show, we are combining all of the best elements of this podcast, all the things you have come to know and love here on Poker in the Ears. We're doing a poker movie Monday on a Wednesday. And in that poker movie Monday, we're talking to a surprise celebrity guest being piped in from Hollywood, California. We are previewing an upcoming event, the Irish Poker Open. We're catching up with a couple of members of Team Pro, Fintan and Spraggy.
Wow.
Two horrible turns
it's
already.
It's not a pantomime.
I thought the worst thing that was going to happen is that I held my beer up against my nipple before we came out here, but it turns out everyone hates Fintan and Spraggy.
We are doing a bit of a podcast crossover because we got the guys from the club with us this evening. Adam, Rory, Boovy.
And we're forcing them to play one of my stupid games.
We will be focusing on poker lifestyle. We have got a god-tier YouTuber in the house to talk watches, Mr. Nico Leonard.
So, we've got movie stars, we've got TV stars, we've got Twitch stars, we've got YouTube stars. Is there someone we could maybe bring on at the very end that could hit all of those?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Joe. We have got one of the biggest names in poker. We have got the first ever two-time champion on the European Poker Tour, Victoria Corrin Mitchell, will be joining us this evening.
That's it. Cut the show there. We've peaked. No super fan segment. This time we've got the poker tournament upstairs. We will be giving away packages to the Irish Poker Open. Hopefully that's a nice consolation prize. Super fans versus Stapes today.
Indeed. And talking of Mr. Stapleton, I was hoping, as this is a live stage show and you are a live studio audience, that we might be able to persuade him, and he's going to need a lot of encouragement, might persuade him to get behind the microphone and maybe entertain us with some of his stand-up routine. But I know he's a little bit shy, so I know it's going to take a...
You want some stand-up? All right, I'll do it! What's up, London? How we doing tonight? You know, I used to live here in London. I come back all the time, and I really love, what I like to do is when I get here, I like to stand in the middle of Leicester Square, right? I like to stand in the middle of Leicester Square and go, McDonald's, Burger King, M&M store, Subway, England. For those of you who don't know, I do poker commentary on television. Now, everyone here does know that, but usually they don't. And at which point I say, that's okay, because neither do my parents. All they know is that I still have to be on their cell phone plan. Sometimes when I do stand-up, for a while I didn't talk about doing poker commentary. And I happened to do a show in Edinburgh, and one of my favorite comedians saw the show, and I'm not gonna drop his name, Michael Ian Black. And after the show, I said, Michael, please, I've been a fan of yours for years. Any notes you can give me, I would really appreciate it. How can I make this better? And he goes, you know, I feel like I didn't really get to know you that much. You have one of the coolest jobs in the world, and you don't talk about it at all. And I was like, well, you know, I feel like it takes a lot of context for people to understand it. And people don't really, you know, stand-up's about struggle. Stand-up's not about success. And he goes, Joe, you're not that successful. And I realize that's the hook right there. That's the hook. When I meet people who don't know what poker commentary is, I explain it like this. If you've ever been in a bar or a restaurant and seen poker on TV, I'm one of the voices that's on mute. You've never seen my work and you've definitely never heard it. Sometimes people in America think I'm bragging when I say that I'm on television. Now when I was on TV here, it was Channel 4, which was kind of a brag. In America, I'm on something called FS1. And let me tell you, it is not a brag when someone asks you what channel you're on and you give them a number that's 4 digits. In America, I'm past all the movie channels and Babe Station. The only time you can find the channel I'm on by accident is if you fall asleep on the remote. I have all of the drawbacks of being a celebrity, but none of the benefits. I will never get a nicer table in a restaurant. I'll never get moved to the front of the line of a club. But twice a year, a random fan will email me a picture of my house from Google Earth. It's the sorts of people that are poker fans. No offense to all 250 of you, but I'll never get noticed at the opera. Casino bathroom, line out the door. Michelin star restaurant, nobody's bothering me. The Nando's in Nottingham, I wish I had had a Sharpie. Somebody's tits were getting signed. A man's tits were getting signed. The most embarrassing aspect of the level of famous that I am is I get invited to play in a lot of celebrity charity poker tournaments. And when they announce my name, I really revel in the silence in the room when they try to figure out if I'm the celebrity or the charity. It gets so quiet, I get to hear people go, I think this is his make-a-wish. The good news, and I don't know if you know this or not, but when you are at any level of celebrity, you get to date a celebrity of equal or greater value. And you know who mine is? The voice of Sky. Not the woman that does all the voiceovers, but the one if you have a problem with your account, she's like, press 1 for English, 2 for Spanish. That's my level. Now, the last time I did this show, I did some stand-up and I bragged about being on ESPN. And I think people at this point have figured out that I was fired from ESPN. But I don't think that people know why. And I'm gonna tell you the story right now. Do you wanna hear the story?
Yes!
So I'm doing live sideline reporting from ESPN and Kathy Liebert is playing for a charity. And she's playing for the Feed the Children Foundation. And I go up to Kathy and I say, Kathy, hey, it's very honorable. Tell us a little about the charity. And she goes, well, there is over 30% of children in Africa are suffering from food insecurity. And I just think it's something, we live in a world of such abundance and no one in this world should go hungry. So I'm donating 20% of my winnings to the Feed the Children charity. And I said, Kathy, that's beautiful. Thank you very much. Coming up next on ESPN, the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. Not only was that my last interview on ESPN, that was the last live interview they ever broadcast. You guys have been a great crowd. You're in for a good show tonight. Thank you. Here we go.
Please make some noise for Joe Stapleton. Oh, Joey, we've hit our third centenary.
300 years. Hard to believe.
Actually, 300 episodes over 9 years, which is still an achievement. And here is a hashtag fun fact. If you were to listen to all 300 episodes of this podcast back to back, it would take you 13 days.
That honestly doesn't sound that fun.
Now, we did say we were going to celebrate this anniversary with some gifts. And I got this for you, Joey. You said that we should get 300 of something.
Something 300 related I thought would be fun. And then I was like, well, I don't want to spend 300 pounds on something. I don't know what I can get for less than a pound. So I went a little different. I went from the heart. Do you want me to do yours first?
Yes, and I'll tell you what you have 300
right,
of in that bag.
If it's 300 pounds, I don't want to be really heavy.
Spoiler alert, it isn't. That's right. It's 3G. It's 300 3G enhanced men's bodies.
All right, there we go. Magic Mike rearing its ugly head yet again here, reminding me of my lack of abs. I did actually look into getting you something 300 related, but it wasn't going to get shipped to me in time. Now, he went a little funny here, and I like to show James up. You guys know that I like to show James up a little bit. So James, I know how big you are into spy stuff. So I went into an antique store in London. Go ahead and open that up. Go ahead and open that up. Now, this thing, you can unfurl that. That is a map that would be sewn into the jacket of a British spy. So if they got trapped behind enemy lines, that's an antique from World War II.
That is so cool.
And the button that you lost from it, which was 150 pounds, is a compass. Does anyone have a compass to help us find the compass?
It. Found it, found it.
There it is. That would be in their jacket. So that way they could use it to find their way. Yeah, yeah. There you go. I knew you were into spy stuff. Oh, God,
thank
there
you.
Go all
very,
my notes.
Very kind, and now I feel very, very guilty and have been shown up massively. Obviously, to celebrate this episode, we want to do something special, and that's why we're back here at the Hippodrome. I think we have people in the house who were here 6.5 years ago for episode 100.
Of course we do, yeah. What's up? There we go. There's one there. Yeah, see, if it's okay, just calm down.
And we were thinking back on that and what that show was like. I remember being ridiculously nervous.
James was nervous. I was a little bit less nervous. I was way more nervous tonight because it feels like it matters a lot more now. Maybe it's because we have legit titles.
I think it's more the fact we've got Pokestar's Fat Cats in the audience.
All right, does anyone want to see us roast the CEO? Just kidding. Maybe in 400. Not happening. Too long to go on the new contract.
You mentioned contracts. Yeah, the biggest change in our lives is that we are now both on the books. We are officially Pokestars ambassadors, and we are both currently in violation of our contract. So put the patch on, Joe, quick.
Wait, patch time, sorry.
Before Curtis spots it.
All right, there we go. So what does that mean, by the way? What does this mean? All I know is that it meant I got free food in Paris, which I was very excited about. I had a little wristband. All the free prepackaged sandwiches I could eat. Very fun.
A lot doesn't change, guys. We're still doing the podcast, still doing the live stream, still doing the TV shows, but there's some more fun stuff planned, which we'll talk about down the line. But also, I think you're going to have the chance to play with us a bit more. And that's really good news for you, because we're both terrible at poker.
Yeah, you'd much rather see us at the table than Spraggy, right? Okay, maybe then Fintan. Then Sam Grafton.
Didn't you have to go to Vegas at the weekend on some PokerStars assignment?
I had to go to Vegas this weekend. I had to get to sit in a luxury box at the Golden Knights versus Red Wings game this weekend. I had to go ATV riding, and I had to talk into a camera 3 days in a row, which I hate. Yeah, so that, I mean, really cool stuff on the horizon for us. Hopefully you guys enjoy the content that comes out of it.
I've started vlogging on YouTube. God help you all.
Yes.
I can finally now play online on PokerStars.
Yeah, more free money for people.
I have already won 2 50-cent spin and goes. I have made it to step 2 of Power Pass.
All right, so we got a plug for the Power Pass.
We also have to promote the fact that for the first time ever in my life, I will be playing the Sunday Million, the flagship weekly tournament on PokerStars, and I will be streaming it with Nick Walsh this weekend. So Sunday night, my Sunday Million debut, you get to watch it on the PokerStars Twitch channel. That's the second plug of the evening.
Plug number 2, and plug number 3 is a personal one for me, but a lot of you have been asking. I wrote a poker comic book with a fellow named Neil Gibson. Neil is here tonight. Hit him up after the show. He's got sample copies. If you get to him quick, you can get an early edition copy of the comic book.
Which is called?
Trapped.
And I know, Joe, it is your dream, your ambition, that one day that comic book will be transformed into a motion picture. Which brings us on to the subject of cinema, which brings us to our, takes a deep breath, Poker Movie Monday on a Wednesday at the Hippodrome, released on a Friday, as we revisit a film that we first talked about 7 years ago?
Yeah, a while.
The Netflix movie Win It All. And joining us, live from Hollywood, is the film's star and co-writer, Jake Johnson!
Hey, there he is.
What's up, everybody?
Jake, I went back and listened to that episode from 2017, and thank God we liked it. Oh, that would have been awkward.
Well, I got to say, man, I loved your stand-up set just now. I was able to hear it. But what was really funny is I could hear all your bits, but they muted the audience.
Oh, God.
So they were just these really weird pauses. And truthfully, it made stand-ups look like maniacs. You would say these great jokes, total silence, and then you would just go, another thing about my celebrity, silence. And I'm like, I know he's killing, but they've muted the wrong group.
I appreciate that, but actually the mics were totally live here in the room. You heard everything slash nothing.
Well, Joe, then it's the wrong group because you had some good bits, man.
Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us. Let's talk a little bit about when it all kicked things off. I know it was a while ago, but it turns out that you worked in a casino early in your career.
Yeah, the Hollywood Park Casino in Inglewood. You remember that one?
Jake, that is where I learned to play poker, playing 2-4 limit at Hollywood Park.
Yes.
And I would say people there were playing for teeth money, like people literally missing teeth, trying to win it back at 2-4 in Hollywood Park.
Yeah, I mean, it was right next to the horse track. It was just, I moved to Los Angeles, was trying to be an actor. I got a job there. I was a third-party player. So I used to play blackjack and table games. I was corporation, so I would always make sure that there was enough money on the table.
And how did you do as a corporation player?
I mean, not great. I wasn't heavily promoted.
It doesn't surprise me that you're immersed in that world, Jake, because we talk about a lot of poker movies on this podcast. Most of them are appalling, but the one thing that they normally consistently get wrong is the authenticity of the poker. This movie does not get that wrong. The poker feels very real in this film, and I'm guessing that was very important to you.
Yeah, the way we shot that whole sequence was we actually just had a bunch of poker players in a room and we were just playing poker and we just had camera operators going around filming it. And then we knew when we had a story beat that we would have to do. But for most of it, we were all just playing cards.
That's really what it felt like. And I've heard you in a couple other podcasts talk about how one of your favorite movies is Swingers. And I kind of got a Swingers vibe from a bunch of your movies, the way the scenes are sort of verite and the sound is kind of mixed up together. Is that something intentional in the things you work on?
Yeah, I think that kind of indie spirit's really nice. Also, California Split in terms of great
movies. Oh, hell yeah.
Movies.
Great movie.
I mean, just as good as it gets. And so that feeling of it being real and, you know, honestly, being in casinos, for me, the best part of playing poker is it's really funny. And people are funny and the characters are great. And so to lose that in a poker movie felt like the death of the movie. That was the kind of fun of it. It's just people kind of talking trash, goofing around, being there, being human together.
And that's the single best decision you took, is there is not a single hand of poker actually shown in the movie. It's just the moments. It's the reactions. It's the one-liners.
Yeah.
It's a single card being dealt.
Yeah. It's the bragging at a certain moment.
Yes.
It's the fun. I mean, honestly, and I hate to say it, but it's the fun of winning and it's the fun of losing. If you gamble enough, some of those losses are also, you know, they're part of it.
Yeah, I want to get back to that in a second because that's something I've heard you talk about before, but I do want to focus on a little bit. So I have to guess that the monologue from Drinking Buddies is more or less true. You tell this story about you grew up in a card playing family, then you were a prop player in a casino. Where did the love of Hold'em come from? Because clearly you have an affinity for that game as well.
Well, Hold'em came in the whole, you know, TV movement of Hold'em. My mother was a professional poker player, but she did like 5 stud and draw, and so that was how she made her money in her 20s and 30s. And so cards were always a big deal in my house, but we never played Hold'em. And then when Moneymaker made his money and ESPN and, you know, it started becoming on television and every friend of mine was hosting a Hold'em night. I'm like, sure, I'll play poker. If you just wanted to do Hold'em, I'll play Hold'em. And the only people wanted to do was No Limit Hold'em. And I'm like, there's a lot of great variations of poker, guys. We can play other games.
We're working on the mixed game movement now. We're trying to get all the games back in the rotation.
The mixed games are fun. I mean, Omaha's a blast. So a lot of those other games are fun, but everybody knew Hold'em, so it just became the easiest one to always do.
Now, that's a pretty common story from a lot of people we've spoken to on the podcast. John Hamm, name drop, played a lot of poker when he was coming up in Hollywood also. And what I want to know is, do you still play? Do you still play with those same people before? Have those people also gone on to be successful writer, director, actors?
Well, that game that John plays at, we played together. It's our friend Jeff Baena hosts a game. And I did play it for years. The problem with it is it starts at about 9 at night. It ends about 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
And so once my kids came, it got a lot harder to say to my wife, I'm going to go play cards until 5 a.m. on a Thursday and come home with less money.
If anybody's got a 5 p.m. game Jake can play in, he's looking for one.
Exactly.
I can tell, Jake, there are people in the audience looking at your face on the screen thinking, it's the guy from behind the computer in Jurassic World. But you are also, you are also a voice of a Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yeah, I play Peter B. Parker. I play the... our dimension's version of Spider-Man, aka the Fat Spider-Man,
in the Oscar-winning Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, and the new one too.
People are cheering right now. I know you can't hear the audience, but they're cheering for you. They're cheering for Spider-Verse.
Yeah, sure, sure, Joe. Just like they were laughing.
No, earlier. No.
Johnson, silence. Great bit, silence. We're getting killed, Joe.
When you got that call or that email saying that you were going to be a Spider-Man, how important was that to you? Was that like a benchmark in your career?
Yeah, I mean, it was always like everything in this game. There's always a twist where it's, we would like you to play Spider-Man. I say, great. And then they say, the older fat one. And I go, that's right.
He still has webs.
And he has webs. It's just harder to use. He's got stronger webs. And they go like, you know, you're the depressed Spider-Man who's 40 and fat and got dumped, and I'm like, still Spider-Man. You can't take the first line away from me, still Spider-Man.
Well, I kind of want to use that to segue into your latest movie, Self-Reliance, and I noticed a theme from Drinking Buddies to Self-Reliance to Ride the Eagle that they're all, and I hope this goes over well, kind of lovable losers. You know, they all have, but they're all eternal optimists, and I kind of want to know, I found Self-Reliance to be ambiguous. Really well done ambiguity there as to what's really going on in this guy's life. And I, if you can, just give me like the Ain't It Cool News version. Did I get that right?
That it's ambiguous what's going on in his life? What do you mean?
Yeah, like the fact that, is this game real or not? Is it imagined? Yeah. Is it?
So I think that's kind of up to the audience in the end. I think for me, the story I wanted to tell and the theme of these characters throughout is more important to me than playing a certain type of character. Is I like a character's journey. I like they start, the middle, and the finish, and the growth at the end. And so for Self-Reliance, the game of it is to the lead character, Tommy, everything is 100% real, and to the family it's not. So however the audience wants to see that ended, I think it's just fine.
All right, great. Now, that movie hasn't come out here in the UK yet, I don't believe, which is why we're going to do some good plugging here to make sure that people get to see it when it finally does air on Hulu or whatever the version of it is here. I did want to ask you about one more poker-related thing, and that I've heard about this legendary Midwest charity poker tournament, like in Kansas City or something. Is this...
Yeah, Big Slick.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about that? Because there's a lot of name-dropping that can happen as a result of this. Tell us about that tournament.
Yeah, you want to be part of it? I could hook you up with Riggle.
Yes, of course I want to be a part of it. Are you nuts?
All right, I'll send an email to you and Rob Riggle. Riggle's the guy who got me into it. They raise money for a children's hospital in Kansas City, and it's an utter blast. And there's, you know, poker, and we went to, like, the Kansas City Royals game, and we're all on the field, and it's just goofing around, and then there's a big auction at the night to raise money, and I think they make something like $500,000 a year doing it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I can't...
It's nothing but a blast.
I can't pledge to match that, but we do have the CEO of PokerStars sitting right here and a couple of the C-level employees, so maybe we could kick in a little extra for this charity poker tournament if I get to make it out there. We could do that, right? Right, crowd? We could do that. I'm getting a nod. I don't know if the nod is yes or the nod is you're out of here, but I am getting a nod. One last thing I want to talk to you about before I let you go, Jake, is the We're Here to Help podcast.
Yeah.
Where is it fair? By the way, it's the number one podcast in the world. That's correct, right?
Yes. Don't look it up.
Don't look it up, but it is the number one podcast in the world.
Can we steal that one?
I don't see why not. No one else is looking it up.
Of course you can. Of course you can.
I'd even sell for the number one poker podcast. Who cares if it's true or not?
Done. Ours is the number one advice podcast then.
It is funny, but oftentimes objectively bad advice.
Yes, I think that's fair.
Now, what is the best payoff you've ever had? Have you had a really good, someone calls back in and I did your completely batshit crazy idea and it worked?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the follow-ups have been a blast, and we're getting kind of more into them. One of them that we just had, which was fun, was a woman writer wrote a book, and there was a sex sequence in it, and she didn't want her parents to have to read that part of her book. So she called in and said, like, well, what do I do? So we thought, like, and we ended up with saying, just do a version of the audiobook for your family where you omit the certain words. So she did. It was a really funny episode, but it backfired because her dad heard the episode and has since been talking about his sex life with his daughter. And he's used it as an opportunity to just be more honest about, like, sex stuff he's done with, like, her mom. And so she called up and I was like, what a great turn of events here.
This is yet another reason why my parents have no idea what I do. They can't find the channel. They can't find the website. Jake Johnson, I may write into your podcast at some point because I heard you tell a story about how you took an RV through the Midwest and your goal was to, like, work out material in dive bars. I've literally been given money to do that this summer. So
no kidding.
Yes.
We were doing, like, the, you know how Seinfeld did Comedian?
Yeah.
Where we wanted to do Comedian, but what it's like when an audience doesn't know you and hates you.
Yeah,
you get
that's
up on
it.
Stage and they don't know you and they hate all your bits and you have to really work. I'm like, that's what it really feels like.
So I didn't think that's what it's going to be, but now that I hear your story, that's probably what it is going to be.
That's what it was for us.
I may write into the podcast. Everybody, Jake Johnson, thank you so much. Thanks, Jake.
Congrats,
what a star. Watch Self-Reliance. Listen to We're Here to Help.
And we have got plenty more guests to come, and including in the next part of the show, because we are now looking ahead to the Irish Open, which is less than 2 weeks away. It is going to be the 40th live edition of the longest running poker tournament outside of America.
Let me know when they get to 300. Love you guys. Love you guys.
So yes, we're going back to Dublin. We're streaming the main event. We're going to be there from the very start. So there might be a few side events, might be a few early tournaments that Joe and I play this year.
That's right. I'm in for the, what's the lowest buy-in? What am I allowed to play? Anything?
2-4 limit.
2-4 limit? Oh, what a callback. Get some real comedians out there.
Last year I played the main event.
Took over the broadcast
Resulted in the broadcast being a bit of a disaster. So this year I will not be playing the main event. I'll be focusing on the actual stream. But we're going to introduce two people who were there last year and going to be back playing the main event again this year. Please welcome to the stage two of Team Pro's finest, Fintan Hand and Benjamin Spraggy Sprag.
Yay! Two of the finest, arguably the finest.
It feels like we're getting the band back together because Fintan and Spraggy was the partnership, and is it still a thing?
Spraggy asked for 80% of everything, and
I
accepted, and then he went back in with 90, so we had to split up for a little bit.
A little Hall & Oates situation, and Fintan was like, I can't go for that.
Do you remember Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty?
The Rockers?
And he threw him through the plate glass window. At some point, you've got to realize...
Is rising, and some people got to get left in the dust. There's a Simon and a Garfunkel.
Professionally, we're done. Personally, we're still very good friends.
And I guess that now that your reg's on the live circuit, you still get to see each other and hang out.
I try my best. I text him like 4 or 5 times an event, and he responds once or twice.
I like the fact that obviously Ben set the challenge. Ben won a UKIPT title, and you're like, hold my beer. I mean, in the space of 6 months, you both won UKIPTs, right?
Yeah, so I won Brighton, not to brag, I won Brighton in last year, UKIPT season, and the actual most insulting thing was I was on the final table with Fintan as he won his main event, and I came in last 6, final day, and I horrendously punted.
Oh, didn't lucky you it, where you just folded aces so that your friend...
No.
My friend.
It was unfortunately so bad that, I eliminated myself in 6th place. But yeah, Fintan and I went back-to-back, basically.
Yeah, we went back-to-back in events that we played.
That's
I
cool.
don't want to rub it in with Sprague, but it was the worst performance I've ever seen.
Really? Worse than my satellite performance?
I don't know.
These two guys watched me butcher a hand so badly in Reno that they had to walk away from the table.
Well, the story was we played a satellite and it was, I think, maybe an 8-person satellite with 2 people getting a seat. Fintan and I busted. Joe was still left in, and obviously Run at Reno's a good community event. A lot of you probably would have been. And we're watching Joe play. Someone goes all in, 3 players left, only 2 make the seat. And Joe makes a call with pocket sixes, and he ends up winning.
Snap call.
Snap call. Like, he didn't even think about it. And he walks up, he wins the seat, the guy loses a flip, guy had ace, king, whatever. And he comes over to me and goes, "That call was fine, right, guys?" And that call's probably losing, it was a $1,000 ticket, the call's probably losing $300. Like, maybe the worst call in the history of satellites, but Joe was unfazed. My call was pretty similar. A guy went all in, I thought he was bluffing, and he had a full house. Which is close to bluffing.
Polarized, you were right.
He had polarized. It or he didn't, and this time, very unlucky for me.
So, the Irish Open, memories of last year. Spraggy.
Memories.
I know there's a lot of alcohol involved, so I appreciate the memory may be a little bit...
The memories are somewhat thrown off by Guinness.
No, the Irish Open last year, we had a community event that honestly was one of my favorite experiences as a poker player. It was like 100 people, lots of my friends, lots of people from the community. We hosted a free roll. Maybe Kevin will organize the last minute again for this year, no pressure, right?
There's another massive free roll I've heard this year for everyone at the Irish Open.
Did you say triple? Did you say quadruple?
More!
My memories of the Irish Open actually involved Conor Beresford, a stack of chips not so neatly organized, about 5 tournament directors stood in a line watching him play, him revealing his cards like this, and me standing next to those 5 tournament directors saying, he's fine, let him play. And I'm pretty sure he bagged the chip lead. So
he sure did.
Speaks both to the testament of Connor and the quality of the Irish Open.
I think his statement the next day was...
I don't like the way you finished that sentence one little bit. It's one of the most historic tournaments in the world. 40 years, like you said. I don't know the oldest tournament in the UK, about 20 years or so.
It's a great event.
It's the best.
For a lot of reasons.
Fenty, you got a quick memory?
Honestly, it was the community event. I truly loved it. Yeah. It was my wife's first time playing live poker, and Benjamin attempted to bubble her. If I remember correctly, there was 13
it's
pays.
It's cut out there in the free rolls.
Spraggy called her all in on the bubble, and they tried to pay the bubble, and Sprag stood up and said no. He quit.
Yes, you denied the bubble. I remember that. He was like, no.
So, again,
we have a word for people like that.
It was a joke.
It's called asshole.
Where they said, shall we all pay the bubble? And Hannah was obviously playing for her first time on the bubble. It was 18 paid, 19 left. And everyone agreed, because it's a community event. Yeah, we'll pay the bubble. I jokingly say, no, I'm not paying the bubble. And the tournament director says, he doesn't want to pay the bubble. Play the next hand. So we play one more hand. And
it's flop,
obviously...
Stop 2 pair, by the way.
Right, most of the time it's going to be inconsequential. It's one more hand, everyone's just going to fold. Next hand, okay, pay the bubble. That was a joke, ha ha. Hannah then starts getting involved in some outlandish part where she was basically second in chips going in, and it's like bet, raise, re-raise, and I'm there shitting myself, like, please don't get stacked this hand. And she did, and I'm pretty sure she lost.
Top pair against top set. Yeah.
It was top pair against top set, which was obviously, whatever, coolest situation given what was happening, but she got paid. We agreed to pay the bubble. But for a moment there, I was fearing a big Fintan hand backlash.
So I've seen a video on social media teasing the fact that you guys are up against each other at the Irish Open. A Team England versus Team Ireland. In the video, by the way, Spraggy's punting again with A7 offsuit. When will he learn? So what's this about? In a nutshell.
I think they just want to put us up against each other, and at the end of it, if I lose, I might get sacked.
Yeah,
I think that's what it's coming down to. They're looking for a good reason.
It's jobs on the line, territory.
I love it. Playing for contracts.
What are they calling it, WWE? A retirement match?
It's a retirement match. It's Shawn Michaels getting kicked in the head. Yeah, now, that's what's happening.
Should highlight that this thing also involves the guys from the club podcast. And now would be an excellent time to bring them up on the stage as well. Please welcome Rory Jennings, Adam Mercola, and Lawrence Berry.
There we go. We got it. Take your mics.
What's going on, lads?
Good to see you.
Look, we know you guys are far more successful than we are, but you have to appreciate this is our audience right now, so you have to explain what the club is.
The club is a group of chancers who came together to create a football podcast.
that weirdly has resonated with a very select few people and does relatively well on YouTube.
The flip side of it is, I don't know if you know us, but we're kind of a big deal.
You know what's weird is that I will call football soccer almost 100% of the time, but when they're around, I'm like, football! I'm scared. I'm like, yeah, football's a great game. No, I'm really starting to like it.
You convinced me. When we played football together in Paris, I thought you shone.
You're amazing. You're amazing, man.
You guys are assholes. They went so easy on me in this football game. I'm going to be respectful because you guys didn't make me look like an idiot. But I will say that I was really impressed with how talented you guys are, both at soccer and at doing stuff on camera. I hadn't gotten to see you guys in action before, and it was really impressive. Like, you're very good at what you do, except for the poker part.
Yeah, we struggled, didn't we?
Wait a minute. Speaking about Brighton here, I finished third then.
Just to interrupt, when I won, not to brag, UKIBT Brighton main event this year, second place, Dominic Nietzsche, who you guys will know is a multi-million
superstar
dollar winner.
Superstar of the game. Yeah.
Superstar poker player. Third place, Adam McCullough.
Give it up for Adam, everybody.
Dominic Nietzsche, by the way, I had him in my pocket at one point.
We're going to move on to a stupid game in 1 second, but I do have one question for you guys, which is, what is the hierarchy here? What are the roles?
It's high order, and yeah. I'm definitely the
reverse
the
height
least,
order.
The least important.
Oh, by height. It's okay.
I actually have two quick questions. First of all, Rory, Adam, Boothie. Why not Lawrence? Where does the Boothie come from?
Someone said it on YouTube once, and it stuck basically, and people just started calling me Boothie. So yeah, it's a play on my surname basically.
Right.
Yeah.
So basically, someone screwed up your last name, and now you're stuck with it.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Sounds a little bit familiar, no?
Are you, but the final question is, are you guys aware of the shenanigans that are planned for the Irish Open with this whole team competition? You know what's going on?
We've been kept well informed. I don't know if Boothie has, but myself and Rory have been kept well informed, and I, for one, cannot wait.
Well,
although I got rejected from Team Ireland. They wanted to check my passport, which I'm disappointed about.
There.
Well, the good news is, as a warm-up, you're going to get to play a game before you go to Dublin, because, Joe, you've got something planned this evening.
That's right. You guys get to play one of my stupid games. Now, the game is called England versus Ireland, but we're not going to divide the teams that way. It's actually going to be the club versus Poker Stars Team Pros.
Hang on. Easy. Mathematics is not my strong point, but 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. We are uneven here, so we are going to need to round out Team Pro, and luckily for us, we have in the house this evening the newest member of Team PokerStars Pro. He is the most recent EPT champion. He is a UK poker legend. It's Barney Bowman!
Barney Bowman, come on! Yeah! An actual OG legend of the game. Barney Bowman, yeah!
I think it was the fact that you were interviewed on this podcast 2 weeks ago, Barney, that clearly sealed the deal for you. So
you're welcome.
Congratulations.
No other possible explanation.
Absolutely. So key question is, what's going to be happening then? What are your plans for the immediate future? Where are we going to see you? What are you doing?
Well, it's a real shame because I love the Irish Open more than just about any other, more than any other tournament. But this year, for about the first time in 20 years, I can't go because I'm going to a mate's wedding. So that's a real shame. So call it off. That's the way.
He's considering it.
That wasn't a hard no.
Did you say call it off?
Call it off, yeah. Ruin the relationship.
Well, I'm going to the stag night in a couple of days, so there's a chance.
That's right. He's going to come there. All right, well, we're going to ruin some relationships here with England versus Ireland. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to put two things up against each other. One will be English, one will be Irish, and then I'm going to ask you a question about it. So you have a 50-50 shot of getting it. If you get it wrong, you're out. And so the last team with a man standing will be the winner.
Would you like me to keep track of who's in and who's out, Joe?
Yes, please help me keep track of who's in.
I know your memory all too well.
Okay, here we go. Category we're going to start, we're just going to go one per team, per teammate, then switch teams, okay? So here we go. First category, England versus Ireland. England is Colin Firth. Ireland is Colin Farrell. Okay, now here comes question number one. England or Ireland? Which one is taller, England or Ireland? Barney, starting with you.
I'm going to say Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell is shorter than Colin Firth. Barney Bowman, first eliminated in England.
Au revoir,
wow,
mate.
What a start to his...
Well, it's been a pleasure, Barney.
Barney, you can...
Thanks very much.
Those contracts come and go.
You said this was going to be dignified.
You can stay. Don't worry. It's not like a poker tournament. You're allowed to sit here. Fintan.
Rebound.
There's a different category for them. Don't worry. Here you go, Fintan.
Scared, Fintan.
Which one has more IMDb credits, England or Ireland?
You do know who Colin Farrell and Colin Firth are, right?
I do.
I'm just checking, because sometimes there are gaps.
That's why you wanted me to move on, because Fintan doesn't know pop culture.
I'm going to say...
One of them starred in
When the Dust Settles. I'm going to say Colin Firth.
Colin Firth does have more IMDb credits. Fintan survives. Last question for Team Poker Stars. England or Ireland, which one has their first IMDb credit listed as a show called Crown Court, in which a real jury rules on a fake court case? Ooh. I am winning.
You don't
well,
know.
It's important.
You don't know. It's a
winner. Of course I'm winning. It's important.
It's like a flip, man.
This is the kind of rivalry you can expect at the Irish Poker Open.
I've heard the Crown Court, obviously Colin Firth, the Crown little connection.
Well, you right. Don't know.
Colin Farrell is probably a little bit more comedic, and it sounds like a Clock. Weighing in on a fake
Clock.
Jury.
Clock!
Yeah, come on, man.
Clock. Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell is incorrect! We've lost two members of Team Pro. We've got three members of Team The Club still involved. Here we go. Queen Guinevere, England. Queen Maeve, Ireland, two fictional queens.
Okay.
Which one, we're gonna start with Rory, which one was known as strong-willed, cunning, ambitious, and promiscuous?
Oh, I know her, Queen Guinevere.
Queen Guinevere is incorrect.
Oh, I know her.
Ireland.
Oh, I know her.
No
Easy.
One.
You should have dwelled on it, like I did.
Rory loses his first flip of the day. Here we go. Question number two for Adam. Which one was thought to be in love with her husband's top knight, England or Ireland?
England.
England is correct. Adam survives.
Right to win it.
Question three for Lawrence.
Come on, son.
Which one is said to have retired in a convent, England or Ireland?
I'll go Ireland.
Ireland is incorrect.
Oh, that's misleading. It's a trick question.
It's 1v1. It's Fintan versus Adam.
Okay, two
Adam,
players
left. Adam, do you
really
want to be Ireland? Do you want to win for Team England over there? Is that what you want to do?
Do I have to sing the national anthem?
You're wearing green and everything.
Now we're going to bounce back and forth. Here we go. Stonehenge versus the Blarney Stone.
Blarney, is it?
Blarney Stone.
Blarney.
That's a good tie-in, though, right? I should have thought of that. Okay. First one is to you, Fintan. Which was desecrated by the Griswolds in National Lampoon's Vacation, England or Ireland?
England.
England is correct. Over to Adam. Which one is made from carboniferous limestone?
Oh, whoa.
One player
relax.
To a hand.
You snitch.
Relax.
Calm down. You got to have competitive.
Tattletale.
This is a fun game. Calm.
Well, this bodes well for Dublin, doesn't it?
Snitching.
Let them help him. They
get those boxing gloves out.
I forgot what answer I said now. What answer did I have to just say, Rory?
You said Ireland.
I said Ireland.
I'm gonna take Ireland, but with an asterisk. Did he say England?
No.
I never said England. Rory heard. Closest
Ireland,
to me.
I heard Ireland.
All right, here we go. We're going to keep it going. All right, fine. Fintan, England or Ireland, which one has been a legally protected monument since 1882?
Legally protected? I'm going to say England again. No.
Stonehenge is literally thousands of years old. The Blarney Stone has been a protected monument since 1882.
Been protected from the
1892. You said that with such a disappointed voice.
Yeah, in fact, you know, whatever. It's fine. So, Adam.
Get this right and you win. It's over if we win, right?
It's exactly. If Adam gets this one right. But again, an asterisk. But because they went easy on me in Paris at the soccer, I'm going to give them that one. All right, here we go. Oasis.
By the way, you just called it soccer again.
Yeah, it's interchangeable. It's a thing. It's a translating. Some for them, some for you. Okay, here we go. England versus Ireland, Oasis versus the Cranberries. Which one put out more studio albums, England or Ireland?
Ireland.
The Cranberries put out more studio albums than Oasis.
In your
congratulations!
In your
there may be an asterisk against that win, but Team Club are victorious. At this point, we would like to thank Adam, Rory, Booby. Thank you to Fintan, Spraggy, and Barney.
Big round of applause to Team Club and Team Poker Stars.
Oh. A lot of trees have suffered for this podcast tonight.
Just the cigarettes people have smoked outside nervously.
That is true. Something that's become a bit of a regular feature on the EPC live streams recently, I'm sure that most of you watch those live streams, is the random watch talk. Because I know some members of the audience, like to try and identify the fancy watches the players are wearing at the feature table. But I am willing to put my hand up and say I am not an expert in this field.
I like the watch talk, by the way. It's a new layer to things. It's not just all bad lookalikes and terrible jokes for me. We get to talk about the watches on people's wrists. I know even less than you do.
Well, fortunately, Joe, we are joined by a man who does this for a living. He is the self-proclaimed watch expert on YouTube. He's come all the way from Belfast via the Netherlands. Please give a warm welcome to Nico Leonard.
Thank you so much.
Nico, for people who don't know your story, how did you become the shouty watch guy on YouTube?
I just started shouting on YouTube. That was it.
That's
just
the
randomly
story.
Yeah. Like you started with your first YouTube video. Can I have an applause for that, please? Oh. I guess first YouTube video.
I know we want to talk about you. Do you have any notes for James's first YouTube video?
Yeah, don't do it again.
Oh, he's out. You want to quit while you're on top, buddy. So, Nico, when is it that you first became a fan of time?
It wasn't time. It is the fact that we can tell time while using mechanical parts. That is insane. It's absolute insanity.
It is insanity, but also it's a technology that's existed for hundreds of years, thousands. I don't know. Is it Stonehenge or is it Blarney Stone?
1600s, 1700s.
Yeah. So
even before that.
What is still so fascinating about it?
That we still love it. That we still enjoy it. We don't need it. We don't need a watch to tell the time. We use watches for several different reasons, including wearing a gold watch because you're insecure or something. I don't know, whatever.
So the weird thing that connects you with our previous guests is you are also immersed in the football world, right? Before watches, you were an aspiring footballer. You were a protege.
Yeah. Never mind.
Okay, well, I was going to ask the question, what went wrong? But you kind of just pointed
to that. No, don't say that. It's what went right. All of us people that got fats because our lives are great.
I played in an academy, and I was at the point of making my debut, and then I got injured. It is what it is, and then that was football over. But I've now a lot of people that still play football or are at the point of retiring. I'm actually quite happy that with the direction I went. Like, to be honest.
So, you deal in watches. You sell watches.
Yes.
But you
right at bing.com. If anyone nice watches here, I saw a few nice watches.
Is there a checkout code or?
Yeah, checkout code PokerStars10.
Which means you pay 10% extra. Yeah, I knew that there one was coming. So, but obviously, you spend a lot of your time filming your life, and you've become famous for reacting to, reviewing, and critiquing famous people's watches. And you do not pull any punches.
It is that desperate, yes. Yeah, literally.
There was some drama today, right, in the reviewing famous...
Rick Ross, yeah. That's funny, yeah. Rick Ross is wearing a fake watch. Nobody knew, but because I know there's only one of those watches ever produced, I know the manufacturer, and I know the owner of the exact watch. So it was quite easy to spot then, and that went viral on every hip-hop channel and every
so are we gonna radio. See you on, are we gonna see you on TMZ tomorrow talking about Rick Ross's
there,
watch?
There's a big up, yeah. That could be, yeah. That would be funny, wouldn't it? Like literally, it
can
is,
you mention the podcast?
Yes. Yeah,
okay. Thank you.
Poker in the ears.
He's got it. He's got it.
301 episodes by then.
There will be for sure. So you review watches. So we thought it'd be quite nice if we presented you with a watch collection to appraise. My friend and colleague Joe Stapleton has brought his watch collection with him.
I'm a bit of a watch guy. I'm a bit of a watch guy, it turns out. I only own two watches. I'm going to need this bag back.
Fuck's sake.
One of them is a watch I bought for my girlfriend for Christmas, and she threw it in the trash. That one.
Bro, just stop.
No good? Wow, he did the same. And the second is... Yeah. So a long time ago, I had a sugar mama.
This is cool.
When I was young and was a little bit better looking, I had a sugar mama, and she bought me that watch, and I still have it, so...
Yay!
So this watch is what, 20 years old?
This watch is almost 20 years old.
Okay, so
right?
Two things I understand. This neo vintage, right?
Listen, I love the watch. It's really cool and a cool story, but...
In general, if I were going to sell this watch, what would I get for it? I literally have no idea. $100?
Yes. Yeah,
cool,
yeah,
but it's a decent watch.
Ah, I don't want it. Like, I mean...
No, of course. I'm not trying to sell it. I've held on to it this long.
It's cool. It's a story. This is a photo. And a lot of people... For me, watches are photos, are memories, right? I buy watches as a memory. My son was born, and I bought a watch to commemorate that, and I will wear that watch 17 times on all his birthdays, and there will be photos, and you see what I mean? For me, watches are sentimental, and I think that we all... Like... When I was a kid, I wore watches for reasons like insecurity, right? You see what I mean? But this is a story. Don't ever forget that.
It is by far the best memory I have of that sugar mama, so I'll take it.
I'm guessing that is why there are so many nice watches in poker, right? Because when people have a big score, when they have a big win, right. Number one, they've got money all of a sudden, but also they want to mark it with something. They want to remember that occasion.
Right.
You yourself play poker. I know this because... You did a video tour of your home in Belfast.
Yes.
And I spotted you actually have a custom-made poker table in your home.
Yes.
So you host poker games.
I'm not saying anything. I'm in Belfast, Northern Ireland, run by the DUP. I can't say anything about it.
Hypothetically, there could be poker games played somewhere where you've been.
In a virtual world, in some way, shape, or form, there's a vague possibility that there could be some form of... Whatever.
In this fantasy world, has there ever been a time, because we've all seen it in movies and on TV, has there ever been a time that someone has thrown their watch into the pot?
No, but I've heard stories, but I've never checked out.
So what would you expect professional poker players to wear? Do you have an idea in your mind of the kind of watches that might be worn at the poker table if you went to... European Poker Tour or the World Poker Tour?
I love poker. I've never had a talent. I'm very easy to read and whatever it is. But like I've seen from when I was a kid watching poker, whenever poker was at its height, when it was on TV every day, I've spotted all their watches. And that was... Frank Mueller was popular at some point. I mean, I don't know why still, but it is what it is.
Well, fortunately, we have got for you to identify this evening a selection of watches worn by professional poker players. So I'm going to tell you about the poker players in a moment. But first of all, and this is your thing, this is what you do on the internet all the time.
Yes.
You tell us what the watch is, including the name, the model, the reference number. Take us down the line.
Yes, that's the bollocks there. That's the absolute bollocks.
Is that good or bad?
That's a good thing, right?
That's good.
That's good bollocks.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's okay. 5712. That's rose gold. That's special.
5712 is not a time.
No. Sorry. Let me explain. That's a Nautilus. A Nautilus was first introduced in 1976, and this is from a brand called Patek Philippe. And for a lot of people that know and think about expensive watches, the first thing they know they think about is Rolex. But a lot of people haven't heard of Patek Philippe. But that is basically one of the three most important companies and watchmakers in the world. And he's wearing one of them, and that's the bollocks.
Okay, so. This one, a lot of people might recognize. This is not, I'm going to say common, but a lot of people have one of these.
I mean, that watch was actually commissioned in 1949 and 1950 by Pan Am, the American Airlines.
Oh, that's cool.
But not in that color combination. It was a watch that is able to read multiple time zones. So a Rolex GMT, and it was first made public in 1953. Sorry, it's very...
No, that's what we want. We want the nerd shit. Yeah.
We love it. There is one other Rolex on screen, the one in the middle.
Yeah, Daytona. I'm wearing one. I could measure how fast you're running. This is mechanically, right? So keep in mind, this is a watch.
No
right?
computers.
No computers, no electronics, but I can still measure time correctly. But a watch like that, you can actually navigate. You have this navigation thing, right?
Yeah.
I can navigate while using a chronograph. Mechanically. That's how pilots in the First World War navigate. And this is how you measure speed and distance. It's really cool. You can do that with a watch. Not that he does it, but whatever.
Let's give it up for Arthur Rolex.
It's not just Rolex. It's every...
Okay, so last two. These are a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, in your face, a little bit more kind of like...
Yeah, that is ostentatious shade.
Okay. What brand is that one, Nico?
No, I'm not saying that.
Wow.
That's a brand called Hublot. If you have a friend that has a Hublot, unfriend him.
I really hope that none of our bosses have Hublots right now. I'm not even going to look. Yeah.
Get a new boss.
What about the one on
that's, the end? That's really cool. That was actually introduced in 2005. 26170, Audemars Piguet Royal Oak. Right, my last boring lesson for you. That watch saved the Swiss watch industry in 1972. That's insane. And 72, we're talking about an era where people weren't spending money on watches, and we're talking about a very, very dear time. And I mean, we all wear watches now, today, Rolex, AP, Patek, I saw Cartier, I see a good amount of watches in the audience. Fair play, I saw some Apple watches too. The exit is there. Anyway, but that watch saved the
Apple
Swiss watch
industry. All mechanical.
Yeah. So we've identified the watches. Now we have to link them to the players, right? Because they're all jumbled up at the moment. Right. So I'm going to tell you about the poker players, because you might not know them. So let's start with the guy top left there, Adrian Mateos.
Yes.
Spanish poker pro, an online and live crusher, one of the best players in the world, has won millions in prize money, plays all of the biggest events, super high roller. What does Adrian wear?
What I would place him at.
Which of these watches do you think is his?
Patek.
Okay. Hugo Pingray, French guy, a businessman who plays poker, and a businessman with a lot of money. So if you want to change, no, any of the answers no, you can write.
That's a Hublot. It's French, mate.
Okay. Jamil Wakil, I mean, you can probably see the watch in that shot up there. Jamil, relatively new to the poker circuit, used to work in finance, so again, probably has a little bit of money.
Yeah, Daytona. Yeah.
Okay. Jimmy Guerrero, he's French, and he's a character. He's a big personality.
A Royal Oak.
Okay, and last but by no means least, I'm going to give you a clue here.
You're not cheating by matching the arm hair, are you?
I'm trying to.
Okay, I'm going to give you a clue here, which will mean you'll want to change one of your answers.
All right.
Michel Detani, the reigning PCA champion, has a watch that sounds a little bit like his last name.
Fatani.
He has the Detani.
Daytona.
All right, Daytona.
Right, so if he's wearing the Daytona...
Yes?
What are we left with? I think this got very confusing.
You confused it, James. But listen, that guy is wearing a GMT. What do you call him? Jamil.
Jamil's wearing the GMT.
Then, yeah. Okay. I thought a sensitive guy, a finance guy. But finance bros usually wear Daytonas.
Okay. Yeah. Can we reveal the legend, please? And I think you are 0 for 5. It is Adrian Mateos who is wearing the Hublot.
I'm sorry. I'm not an expert. Self-proclaimed, anyway.
That's fine. Hugo Pingray has the Patek. Jamil Wakil has the Royal Oak Offshore. Jimmy Guerrero is your Batman wearer. And as we said, it's the Detani Daytona.
At least I got one right, no?
Yes, well done.
He got 100% correct. Let's give him a big round of applause.
Really cool.
Well, Nico, one day I hope we will actually see you at a poker table at one of our events. If not, we'll continue seeing you rating and reacting to watches online. Yeah. Thank you very much for coming this evening.
Thank you very much. You have a nice watch as well, and I would love to join one of those tournaments. As a kid, I'm dog shite, but I would be an absolute honor if I can do that one time.
It's been a lot having you this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, Nico Leonard.
Nico Leonard.
Well done.
Thanks, dude.
Finally, the live and in-person star of tonight's show, someone who coincidentally we've been trying to get on this podcast since day one in March 2015.
300 years later, we did it.
She is a writer, a TV presenter, and poker player. Now, to most people in the outside world, to most people in Gen Pop, she's best known as the host of the TV quiz show Only Connect. But to us in the poker world, she is the European Poker Tour's first female winner and first two-time champion.
The entire poker world calling for a deuce. No ace, no king, no 10, no 7.
It's a brick! Vicky Curran has done it! She is the first player in the history of 10 seasons of the European Poker Tour to win two main event titles.
The brick heard round the world. Please welcome to the stage, Victoria Carlin Mitchell.
Vicky, thank you for finally saying yes after 9 years.
I want to get something straight, by the way. That clip lives in infamy. And there is someone in that clip who goes, oh, oh. That is not me. I knew to be quiet in that moment. Someone else did not. I'm not going to name names, but I have to say that wasn't me. I couldn't have been more overjoyed in that moment. My jaw was on the floor.
Thank you very much.
Frighteningly, that was 10 years ago.
Yes, it was. It was 2014. You're absolutely right.
I refer to you as a writer, TV presenter, and poker player. Do you still consider those to be the three pillars of your life? Do you get the chance to play much poker these days?
Very little. It's mostly. I can't believe, by the way, you had a quiz without me. And let me throw in, Queen Guinevere was really Cornish, which wouldn't have counted as England in those days.
Does that mean that Team PokerStars wins on a technicality, seeing as the club's victory already had an asterisk against
them? I don't know. We're going to have to do the whole season over again.
I don't play poker in the same way that I used to. It's quite interesting because various regulations have come in for casinos here. There's a know your customer rule, which is, I'm not a fan of it. But it's been quite exciting for the underground cash game scene in London, which obviously I don't know anything about because it's not strictly legal. But if I, as a basically, you know, housewife and mother, had a few hours in the day to play poker, I can imagine what the temptation would be of such an underground.
In
you know.
The day, this underground thing might exist.
Yeah, it might. It might exist.
Wow, all right.
I haven't played a tournament for a long time, though.
I mean, it must be hard enough, though, balancing TV with family life, let alone trying to throw poker in there as well.
It is, although I don't do that much. The brilliant thing with Only Connect is you make three in a day in a really intense period, and then it's on all year. And this year, the series finished after 32 weeks, and they're now repeating them for 11 more weeks.
Sorry, oh, three a day for 32 weeks?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, we make 32 shows, but in a short space of time.
I see, okay.
So I, you know, just pack a lot of children's toys and snacks and go to Cardiff and make a lot of shows in a short space of time. That looks like I'm working hard all year.
I remember doing a quiz with you one time, probably 10 years ago, an Only Connect quiz, and you just smoked it like in 2 seconds. It was like not even funny how good you were at it. Are you so good at it at this point that it's boring to you? Like, are you just like, oh, I know these?
No, it's quite tricky. There was on the parents' WhatsApp group at my daughter's school at the moment, they're discussing who is going to represent year four in the quiz. And the other parents say, you'll have to be in the quiz. But I can't possibly, because then there'll be something really obvious I don't know.
Or and someone makes a Cornish English mistake, and you're like, excuse me.
Well, that kind of thing. But, I always say no to, you know, they make celebrity mastermind, celebrity university. I never do it. Because if I go on and do badly, people are incredibly disappointed. And if I do well, they go, I always thought she was a smart ass. So there's no, it's an absolute lose-lose situation.
Do you feel that same pressure if you get invited to a poker thing?
Well, I do in a way. What always surprises people is that, I mean, I'm sure if this is a room full of poker players, they'll know. If you go to a friendly home game where they're playing for £10, it's almost impossible to win.
Yes.
Everyone just calls every hand, whatever the amount.
They don't respect your raises.
No, they really don't. It's
got to go up in stakes where they do.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, let me just, with no disrespect to, you know, the greatest player of all time, Barney Boatman, it is much, much easier to win an EPT than a £10 tournament in someone's house.
As evidenced by the fact that you've won two and
she's
he's
won
only
two,
won one.
She can say that. I mean,
but let's talk about that because obviously we just saw Barney win EPT Paris. How delighted were you to see your friend join you in that winner's circle?
I mean, I could not have been happier. I was sorry not to be there. You know, to watch Barney win and possibly swap a share in advance. But I just could not have been happier for so many reasons. He's a brilliant player. He's just the nicest possible guy. He's an incredibly just good, nice person.
It's true.
And it proves an awful lot of things that I think about poker that aren't talked about enough. He wins for reasons I find interesting. And I know it's possible to approach, and it's fine to approach, in Scrabble, a lot of the Scrabble world champions are Vietnamese players who don't speak English as a first language, sometimes even at all, but they're brilliant at learning the 2- and 3-letter words as symbols. So it is with poker. There are some great players that are very, very happy to study and learn numbers and study. You know, that is fine if you can be bothered to do it. But sometimes there's a kind of magical middle ground, which is about EQ and sense of the room and a little bit of flair, which, you know, Barney's got it, John Duthie's got it.
Some people are natural born hustlers, right? They just get the game. They just get, they're gamblers.
It's what I like to see. It's a sense of, okay, I understand, because if you can work it out, right, if this hand played out an infinite number of times, what would happen the majority of the time and what's the right bet for that situation? That's fine. And then there's sometimes a moment where there's only now. There's only that guy and me and these cards, and what he's got is the 10 of clubs and the ace of spades. So I'm going to do this. And that's what I find exciting to watch. So just as a fan, you know, Barney's my kind of player.
Do you think you have that?
I sometimes do. On my day, I do. What I mostly have is an ability to make a small leading bet in a way that makes my macho opponent think I'm frightened and go all in when I've got the nuts.
We are going to have to go down the reminiscy road because, like Barney, you were on the EPT at the very beginning. You played those events in the very first season. You realise we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of the European Poker Tour. Barcelona this summer is going to be the 20th anniversary.
That's amazing. But that's great. I mean, it's a lovely tour. It's had some... There are some spots I miss. You know, I'm nostalgic about Deauville. That I'd like to see that one come back. I mean, I always like the ones you could get to by train. But it was always a really classy tour.
Do you miss the shenanigans as well? Do you get into less shenanigans now?
I don't know if there are less shenanigans now or I don't get invited. I remember the first EPT in Monte Carlo. The main thing I remember is performing a lap dance for Willie Tan. And I don't know if people know who I mean by that, but he must be 80-something now. He's like,
we know Willie.
You know Willie. And I don't really remember why, but we're in some awful nightclub. Monte Carlo is in many ways an awful, awful place. But in a kind of, it can be a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And we were in some kind of dreadful Monte Carlo nightclub.
Jimmy's?
Yeah, it was Jimmy's. And I
know the one.
And I must have been, obviously, at the time, I don't know what I was, 23 or something. In my head, I meant it as a joke. I now think, I guess it must have been quite erotic. I was so young. And, you know, just for some reason, found myself writhing on the lap of this ancient Chinese gambler. Does that happen now? I don't know. I mean, you'll be relieved to hear, not with me doing it.
It happens, but it's the reverse. It's the ancient guy on top of a 23-year-old girl, and we're all like, hey, get off, buddy. We don't do this anymore.
But there was a lot of that. I mean, it was a small scene. That's the key thing. It was a small number of people.
You know? And no phones. No recording
and
devices.
No phones. Yeah, that was great.
Right,
that
so that lives only in your memory. That story only exists when you tell a story, not every time you open social media.
But it couldn't happen with a recording device. I mean, one of my favorite poker memories is the time I was in the Vic, you know, my casino home from home, and I was walking up the stairs, and a guy, you know, just near the roulette wheel was hissing into a phone, I told you not to call me when I'm in the hospital. And I would say that is a man whose life has been ruined by the mobile phone. Just wants to be quietly doing his money on the tables.
He's the victim, for sure.
He managed to click it off just as the voice went, new shoe opening. I mean, it was the traceability is hell.
You won your first EPT at the Vic, kind of home game, I think, as you refer to it. Obviously, you wrote the book for Richard Fapora about that EPT win. So I'm guessing that you had to go back and like watch the footage, watch the TV shows again. So it's probably quite kind of solid in your memory.
Oh, you think so? I didn't remember any of the hands. I once played, I mean, I don't know if this is a gender thing or it's just me, but I once played in a home game with a guy who was, for some reason, started talking about an Omaha hand that he played 25 years before. And he sort of went, I had the 9-10-10 jack. So I make it £3. call. Flop comes down, 8-8 queen. I bet out the full 750. I get raised. Every single bet on every, from 25 years ago. Later in the conversation, he mentioned that he had a new granddaughter had been born. I said, oh, that's lovely. Well, what's her name? And he went, oh.
There's no room in his brain left.
He's got, there's no room in his brain. I'm the other way around. I don't know. Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely
if
right.
If only he'd been playing Hold'em and it was only two cards, he might have remembered his grandmother's name.
No, you're absolutely right. To write my book, I literally had to watch the TV show and retrospectively figure out what I might have been thinking. I mean, I got to listen to you saying what I was thinking, all wrong. But I'm
still here.
I know, and I'm not. But trying to figure out what was I probably doing there. Yeah, if you ask me now, I won't know.
I did want to ask you about one more trip down memory lane thing. It's something that does resurface on social media every once in a while. I think it's you doing stand-up comedy at the Apollo. And you're making that face. I look at it, I'm like, oh, wow, this is so cool. Wow, what a piece of history here. It was your first time ever doing stand-up?
Or? Yeah, but thanks for the piece of history. this is a lovely medieval clip. So what do they even have television?
It was in color.
It is 4-3.
I was very young, very young.
So I guess the question is, is there a version of your life that you became like a full-on comedian?
That's the mistake I made was to go to university. And I try to be responsible, because to this day, a lot of people come to me, oh, my son, usually son, it's not really ever daughter, my son has started playing poker, he's dropped out of university, he wants to play cards full time, and I go, he's done the right thing there. And it's not obviously what they want to hear.
No.
I try to generally advise teenagers, go get your qualifications, get a job, play poker on the side, and then quietly tell their parents, don't worry about that waste of time. They should be playing cards. I did stand-up comedy when I was 17, 18, and I stopped and went to university and lost my nerve and never went back. And I often think playing poker was sort of the replacement.
Okay. Was it at university you discovered poker, or had you been playing before that?
I had been playing before. I mean, Barney and I used to play in the old Archway game. You remember that with Patrick Marber and Chris Colson and all these people, but I didn't win one penny in that
game.
You
played poker with Peter O'Hanrahan.
I certainly did. Or the hedgehog, as we call him, because of a player in the figure. He looks like a hedgehog, a terrible hedgehog, and we call him a hedgehog to this day. But I never won anything. But then, of course, there was no internet poker. So you'd go to Archway with your, you know, 50 quid or whatever it was, and you'd play maybe 8 hands over the course of the night, lose it all and go home, and wait a week. You couldn't rack up thousands of hands and learn. It took years to figure it out. And I never won. And I stopped doing that too at university, but that was just kind of social poker. But the whole, the stand-up comedy, we all know the kind of lure of the underground club scene and the sort of late night drinks and the passwords and all of that. That's what attracted me back to poker, is realizing that there were all these games you could go to it's just a child's fantasy of being up after bedtime.
There are a lot of similarities between stand up and poker, for sure.
Yeah.
Barney was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and the other thing that came up was not just the early years of the EPT, but late night poker, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year. What made you say yes to that?
Well, I didn't go originally to play. We watched late night poker, And it was just magical to see poker on TV. Most of the viewers, I mean, it got a million viewers, and there were probably at that time in this country 12 people who knew the rules of poker. So they watched it. They didn't really, they just got...
Everybody understands all in. That's the two words that everybody gets, even if they don't get the rules.
They maybe every single week. Tell us about that dealer button, Nick. Well, every single time. They yes. never got it. Nobody listened. What they saw was a bead of sweat dripping off someone's nose as they faced it. And, you know, people put up their own money. It's weird to think of that now, that you know, nobody was paid anything. They put up their own money to go and be on a TV show, and they might... I think it was quite a lot. I think it was 10 grand or something.
But this is how you know it was a long time ago. They were smoking indoors and on TV.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, good luck finding footage of me on Late Night Poker not smoking. It was absolutely all the time. That was the big gamble, really. God knows I would pass a pair of jacks before the flop. So, you know, the smoking, it was like, really? She's a risk taker? You wouldn't have thought so from the hands I played. But I went to write about it initially, just because it was this incredible underground scene that I knew a bit about that was suddenly on TV. And the first season I went to write about it, and the second season they decided they would have a celebrity special. But there weren't any celebrities that played. I mean, there was Patrick Marber, and then there were...
Did Ricky Gervais play in that game?
Yeah, Ricky Gervais played weirdly in that game. I don't quite... But he wasn't well known then.
No.
Ricky Gervais, Channel 4 insisted that he was put in because he was the guy, they were trying to make him a star.
Yeah, the 11 o'clock show, I think he was doing at that point.
I don't think the 11 o'clock show had even... Or if it had, it was early days.
Yes, very early.
They were about to put him in a bunch of stuff, so he was in it. Stephen Fry, that was the only really... Stephen Fry was the only person who'd have been troubled on a bus. Then there was me, obviously, in poker, Al Alvarez and Anthony Holden, huge names. They'd written incredible, incredible books.
Great books.
And you know, they were great to see. But I think, genuinely, Stephen Fry was the only one people... Well, probably Patrick Marber from the... Because he'd been on the day-to-day. But they had this, you know, they had six celebrities. Oh, Martin Amis, of course. I forgot
Another
about him.
Another great writer.
Martin Amis. But we all played incredibly badly. And... you know, that went out on TV, and then I was hooked. And the next year, I think I found some newspaper to pay the money, so I played myself. I went year after year. I never won any money. I never played a hand well. I mean, it was, you know, but it was nice to be there.
I mean, obviously, this was the era when everyone had to have a nickname, right? I mean, you had Dave the Devilfish Elliott. You had Simon Aces Trumper. Did you ever have a nickname?
I didn't. I mean, my late friend Ashley suggested...
The lap dance.
You'd think... Well, funnily enough, so my friend Ashley suggested Call Girl.
Oh, God!
Because... In the cleaner version that another friend in the same game suggested was Victoria Station. Broadly,
much better. Much better.
My poker motto was call high, fold late. That was my strategy, and there was that. But and then I think one year I had a competition. I wrote later on when I got slightly better at the game. I wrote a strategy column in the Guardian about poker, and I had a competition. I think we were on the. I must have won an EPT by then. We were playing the Premier League, and they said you have to have a nickname. And I had a competition. People had to submit, and Teacup won. So, and that was because of when I was at the final table of the EPT in 2006. I was quite tipsy, drinking wine as I am now. I'd like to say. Quite exciting to be out of the house away from the baby. And Joe Beavers, who was on holiday in Spain, texted the organisers, she looks drunk, take her cup of tea away, or take her glass of wine away and make her drink tea. And I then, you know, sobered up and won the tournament. So I was teacup for a while, but it never really stuck.
Well, Vicky, we're coming up on 20 years anniversary from Barcelona. Any shot we will see you at a tour stop in this benchmark year for us?
Because unfortunately, since you won, some other people have now won two titles, so you need to be the first to win three.
I must say, to lure me back, signing Barney is
more
a
wine.
Strong move. As more wine. That's the hanging out with Barney is one of the great pleasures I remember from the early EPTs. And one of the things, my friends all stopped playing, and it was, you know, it all got a bit serious and businesslike. And I have said to Barney, "Well, if you're going to be there,
I mean, look, you woke up for this segment. Hey, good job.
I think this year is tricky because, I mean, ludicrously, I've had a baby. I mean, this is the thing. I had a baby the first year after I left PokerStars.
Yes.
Which is, I'm not saying it's a sexy thing to do, but it, you know, I guess I had more free time. And so long passed before I had another baby, a woman wrote an open letter to my daughters in the Daily Mail, headlined, "I feel sorry for them and you." You know, because to have... So I've got this baby. So I probably, this year I might not make it. Next year, I can't imagine I won't be in Paris.
All right. There you have it.
It will be an absolute delight to have you back on the European Poker Tour, Vicky. It has been an absolute delight having you on the show this evening. Love spending time in your company. Love hearing the stories of old. Love hearing your views on poker. Ladies and gentlemen, please, a round of applause for Victoria Corin Mitchell.
All right, my babies, that's just about all the time we've got for this special edition of the Poker in the Ears podcast. Thank you to our audience, everyone on staff who put together this amazing show, and of course, the Hippodrome Casino for making it happen. Round of applause for all those folks. Coming up next time, it's our episode 300 after party. That's
oh,
right.
Oh, we're going to milk this for all it's worth. You had the preview, you've now had the live show, and now you're going to have the recap. To be fair, this is a legitimate live event, so it deserves an event recap.
That's right. Some live poker is about to happen right now, so we will be recapping that action next week. Plus, James is going to talk about his experience playing and streaming the Sunday Million.
Please, please go easy on me. I know I'm going to embarrass myself in front of an internet audience, so I'll report back on how that went.
And we're going to continue our countdown to the Irish Poker Open. However, we still have the house cleaning to do, James.
You know what I'm going to say? It begins with D and it ends in D. Discord! Join the PokerStars Discord server. Find the Poker in the Ears podcast channels. There is a link in the podcast description. And as ever, please follow and subscribe. We appreciate your ongoing support.
All right, my babies, that is all the time we have got for Poker in the Ears, episode 300. For James Hardigan, I am Joe Stapleton. Smell you later.